had so much experience, so much history with this institution. And I think that she enjoyed kind of teaching me and helping me. So that was a relationship that really worked well for us. And I think being able to be honest and upfront and forthcoming with what we needed to do to be successful, I think really helped us to eventually do that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of World Strides Podcast, Changing Lives Through Education Abroad, a weekly series of conversations with international education's most interesting thought leaders, as well as discussions on emerging trends, best practices, and innovation happening in our field. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and I am so excited about this week's episode. For many of us in this field, a director position is in some ways career endgame. Today, we're going to discuss how practitioners at all levels can grow in their role, level up in their career, and land that dream job, whatever it may be. I can't imagine a better person to help us unpack this topic than the star of Texas herself, Whitney Longnecker. Whitney is the director of study abroad at Texas Tech University in wonderful Lubbock, Texas. Whitney has been in the director role since 2018, and we love Whitney. I know Whitney has thought a lot about how practitioners can leverage opportunities to strengthen their skills and best position themselves for their next big role. For Whitney, it's embracing and leaning into those other duties as assigned in our job descriptions that can lead to new passions and new areas of expertise. I love her mindset here, and I can't wait to pick her brain. Spoiler alert, I already know this episode is going to be fire. So stay tuned, dear listeners. And with that, let's get into it. Whitney Longnecker, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Zach. I'm pleased to be here today.
I'm so excited for our topic, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the road to leadership in education abroad. To start us off, could you please give us an overview of your professional journey and how you came to be Director of Study Abroad at Texas Tech University?
So I've had the great opportunity to work in higher education for about 15 years now, which is a big number that I am personally still reckoning with. But my journey really started with family connections to travel. So I was very blessed as a child to do an annual family vacation. This was something that my family always took time to do every summer. And while our destinations were not always international, I think what those family vacations instilled in me is kind of this get up and go mentality. So when it came time to look for colleges, I had definitely already caught the travel bug, and I knew about study abroad, and I knew that it was something that I wanted to incorporate into my time as a college student. So I grew up in Iowa, and I ended up settling on Central College, which is a small private college in Iowa with a long history in study abroad. And that history and the opportunities available at Central were really the selling point for me. So I knew going in that I was kind of this travel nerd, and I wanted to take advantage of those opportunities as a college student. So I spent one semester in London, England, took classes as well as did an internship. And after I had that opportunity, I was sold. I knew that this was something that I wanted to pursue again, not just for having another study abroad experience, but also thinking about what a future career in study abroad would look like. So I had the chance to complete a second semester overseas. And that time I studied in Hangzhou, China. Two very different study abroad experiences. I think my experience in London definitely set me up for China because it gave me that confidence and resiliency and, you know, all of those skills that we talk about students getting from a study abroad experience. I feel like I got those in London, and it also made me more adventurous to try something completely different in going to China. So after I had those two experiences, I probably pretty naively and also very boldly walked into my study abroad counselor's office and basically said, how do I get your job one day? Fortunately, an opportunity became available in that very study abroad office shortly after I graduated from college. And so I was able to not only start and have my study abroad experiences at Central College, but also start my career in study abroad there as well. And really, that's kind of where I started building networks, which I didn't realize at the time, but I knew later on would help me down the road when it came to continuing my career in education abroad. So when I was working for Central, I was in road warrior kind of position. So out and about visiting other colleges and universities and promoting study abroad programs. And that really allowed me to get to know a lot of people in the field, but also to see the different ways that study abroad is done at a variety of colleges and universities, which I think was so helpful as a young professional. After doing that job for a couple of years, I decided, okay, this is for sure my career. I want to keep moving forward. And so I decided to take the time to go back to school for a graduate degree. So I went to SIT Graduate Institute in Vermont, did their on-campus program, and studied in their international education program. As part of that program, you do a practicum, and through that experience, had the opportunity to work for Semester at Sea. So I worked for one semester in their home office, which at the time was based at the University of Virginia, and then had the opportunity to sail on two voyages in the spring and summer and worked in their field office. So that was really transformative. That was the first time that I myself as a professional got the chance to be on site with students and not only organizing those experiences for the students, but also leading them through those opportunities and just further allowed me to understand that this really was the right profession for me. But unfortunately, that experience came to an end as I graduated from my master's degree. I think I probably could still be sailing around the world on that ship if I'd given the opportunity, but had to kind of come back to reality a little bit. And at that time, I landed a position at Penn State, which of course has also a long history of education abroad programs. I worked there for a couple of years and then decided once again, it was time for a change. Started looking around to see what those opportunities might look like. And I had a friend at the time who was also working here at Texas Tech. And so she said, well, why don't you check out what Tech has to offer? And so I did. And 8 years later, I'm still here. So I originally started at Texas Tech working with our faculty-led programs. And then about 6 years ago, had the opportunity to transition to the director position. So I think that my journey with study abroad and becoming the director of a study abroad office was fairly linear, especially compared to, you know, others along the way that might have had a more kind of diverse path. I knew that this was something that I wanted to do right away. I did set a goal for myself to eventually become a director of a study abroad office and was very honored and blessed to be given that opportunity and to do so much earlier in my career than I had initially anticipated.
I love and agree with what you said about folks in a road warrior capacity being able to observe so many different types of education abroad offices and that being a wonderful foundation for a career in this field. I speak to that as a road warrior myself, still to this day. To set the stage for our listeners, could you please describe the study abroad ecosystem at Texas Tech University? And also tell us, please, what makes education abroad special at Tech?
So we have a really strong presence on campus. Study abroad is a topic that students around campus are talking about and are excited about. We're quite pleased to be able to facilitate those opportunities for our students as well as our faculty. So last year, Texas Tech sent about 1,200 students overseas. Like many campuses, faculty-led programming definitely reigns supreme on our campus. It is the most popular type of study abroad program that students participate in. And part of that, and what makes Texas Tech special, is that we do have two international locations that are popular sites for those faculty-led programs. So Texas Tech has a center in Sevilla, Spain that has been in operation for over 20 years. And we also have a center in San Jose, Costa Rica as well. So like I say, both of those are very popular destinations for our students and for our faculty who are interested in taking students overseas as well. And I think that the presence of those locations really showcases the university's commitment to international education. I think something that also really stands out about Texas Tech as well is that we have a long history of sending engineers on study abroad programs. As you might guess from the name, Texas Tech is and has a history of being a technical school, and we have a large engineering college. And really, the college and the university committed to ensuring that engineering students had the opportunity to participate in study abroad programs in the same way as students of other academic disciplines. And so with that, we have really developed programs and worked with partners like World Strides and other partner organizations and universities to really make sure that students have this opportunity as well. So I think that that's something that's really unique about Texas Tech. It can be a challenge for many universities in the field, but I think that Tech was definitely ahead of the game when it came to making sure the engineers had equal opportunities here.
We have a lot of newcomers to this field. So I wanted to ask you, Whitney, what does it mean to be director of study abroad? And what all does that role entail?
Every day is different. So sometimes it's hard to answer that question because I feel like my days are really varied. But what I spend the most amount of time working on is really supporting my team and anticipating their needs. So here at Texas Tech, I have 5 team members who join me in the study abroad office. And so really what I try to focus on is being a mentor to them, supporting their needs, and really trying to clear a path so that way they can do their jobs successfully. So that means that I'm anticipating needs and really working with them to say, what are your pain points and how can I help? I really try to be hands-on. And so there are no tasks that my team members do that I won't do. And I think that that's a really key point for someone who's aspiring to be in this role is you've got to still, you know, be in the weeds at times while also managing kind of the strategic view and vision for the office. So that code switching, I think, is really important because at any given time, I could be going from a conversation with one of my colleagues about nitty-gritty details in our application process to then transitioning to a conversation with our vice provost or maybe a dean of a college, and we're talking about future goals for 5 to 10 years down the road. And so being able to really kind of be in both of those spaces, I think, is important and something that I spend a lot of my day kind of transitioning to and from. And then I think also something to be aware of and something that I spend a lot of my time in is meetings. So there's a lot of meetings in my current role, and I really enjoy that opportunity. It gives me a chance to have those kind of strategic conversations and get to know other folks around campus as well as with the partners that we work with internationally.
It seems that the further you go in your career, the fuller your calendar is, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
When I think about the folks who make up the field of education abroad, I am continuously impressed by the level of talent and dedication that is represented in our colleagues. As such, it's no surprise that many of us seek to advance in our roles over time. What are some pieces of advice, Whitney, you would like to give practitioners seeking to step up into a director role?
One of the things that brought me to the field of education abroad was my passion for the experience. Like I mentioned previously, I had the opportunity to study abroad twice as a college student and really, through those experiences, caught the travel bug and knew that this was a field that I wanted to be part of. And I think that that's an important place to start for any new professional, is you've got to love the work that we do. But I also want to acknowledge that that same passion may not be what helps you to advance, because there are certain skills that I think are highly sought after for the director position or even more advanced levels of leadership. And these are different than maybe that initial passion that got you into the field. So what are some of those skills? Things that come to my mind include technology, contract and agreement negotiation, budgeting, financial management, strategic planning, vision setting, networking. I fully acknowledge these are not sexy tasks. Like, these are not the fun things that you think about when you're envisioning a career in education abroad. But I think these are the tasks that really can help set yourself apart when it comes to applying for a director position or something along those lines. So for new professionals or young professionals who are aspiring to get into this type of a role, I would encourage folks to think about what makes you stand out and what are your interests. Maybe, for example, you have a love for technology and you really can apply some of the skills that you've learned. I can tell you, I fight on a daily basis with our application software. I would love to have more technology-based skills or someone on my team that had a passion for that. So something like that alone can help you set yourself apart from the competition, so to speak, when you're thinking about this kind of a role. I also think it's important to address the question, do I need a graduate degree? Do I need a PhD? Those are common questions that I think that we're all considering. So I do have a master's in international education. I chose to go after that degree early on in my career because for me, I really was looking for kind of a foundation to then work from. And I think that the program that I chose definitely gave me that. I do think that if you want to work in a university-based setting, having at least a master's degree is probably going to be required. Even if it's not listed in that job description, having an advanced degree, I think it goes a long way, especially at universities like Texas Tech or others out there that have a more kind of conservative mindset around education levels. Now, do you need a PhD? Probably not. If you want to go for it, absolutely. That's certainly a personal choice. And if it's a passion of yours to continue pursuing education and get that terminal degree, then by all means, please do so. But I don't think that it's absolutely required for a position of a director of a study abroad office.
What are some strategies that you have personally employed to advance in your career?
I, first of all, really have built upon my networks. So I mentioned when I had that first opportunity to work and study abroad, I had that road warrior position, which really gave me a chance to not only see the way that study abroad is managed at many different colleges and universities, but I also got to meet a lot of people. So that was super helpful, not only just to learn more about the field, but also to return to those conversations and those individuals to seek advice or mentorship, or, you know, just kind of get a feel for what was going on, things of that nature. So I think that that has really helped me to continue to the place that I am now by building those networks even from the start. I also definitely employed a say yes mentality, especially early in my career. For this really meant a willingness to uproot my life and move around the country for different types of positions and opportunities. I don't know if that would be as required anymore because there have been amazing advancements in remote and hybrid work, especially since I started working in higher education 15 years ago. So you may not have to go to the lengths that I did to consider new and different opportunities, but I do think that for me, that really helped to make sure that I was working at universities and with study abroad partner organizations that allowed me to really see the career ladders that were available and what those growth opportunities might be. Now, I will say with a word of caution, the same yes mentality can be tricky. It can be a double-edged sword. You don't want to burn yourself out. You don't want to say yes to everything just for the sake of saying yes. So I would encourage folks to be strategic. Think about some of those skills that I mentioned previously that are super helpful for the director position and how saying yes to one opportunity or one experience might help you to build some of those skills. So I think if you're strategic, you can have this say yes mentality while also maintaining a good work-life balance.
We love us a story time here on the pod, and many of our listeners have encountered bumps in the road of life. Could you tell us about a time that you encountered and then overcame a barrier in your career progression journey?
So early on in my career, I was working as an education abroad advisor. And at this particular organization, I really couldn't see a path towards advancement. I didn't know what that looked like. It was hard to envision how I might be able to advance in this particular organization because the career ladder really wasn't defined. So when I say career ladder, really what I mean by that is that at any organization, university, whatever it might be, there should be a clearly delineated path that says, okay, maybe you're an education or grad advisor now, but in the future, you could perhaps advance to, you know, a senior advisor, then a lead advisor, then an assistant director, you know, whatever that looks like. But something that kind of outlines, assuming that you do well, you perform well, these are the steps for you to follow. So in this particular organization that I was working at, that really wasn't defined. And to make matters worse, one of my colleagues in that particular office would always talk about the great things that the previous staff members from that office went on to do. And I think what my colleague was trying to articulate was that this particular work experience could be a springboard for additional opportunities. But all I was hearing was, to do bigger and better things, you have to leave. And so eventually I took that advice. I left because, like I said, there wasn't really a way for me to stay and continue advancing my career. I guess in a sense, I proved this colleague right. I did go on to bigger and better things and eventually was able to move into the position that I am in today. And I don't have any regrets about that experience. But I do think that it's a good reminder that sometimes you really just do need to read the writing on the wall as an employee. If there's a message that's being either intentionally or not intentionally sent to you, sometimes you just need to trust your gut and go with what folks are saying. And I also think it's a really good reminder for folks who work as supervisors that you need to be careful about the message that you're sending to your team members. Like I say, I don't think that this colleague really intended to have the impact that they did, but it hit home for me and ultimately ended up leaving that organization.
One of the things that matters in leadership is executive presence. How can folks cultivate their confidence and present themselves in a way to best be taken seriously?
I really think that you need to believe in yourself and believe that you know what you're talking about and say it. Sometimes just saying that to yourself and even practicing, you know, what you're going to say in a certain situation or to a certain faculty member or supervisor, whatever it might be, helps to kind of practice that confidence. So that way, when you're in the situation, you feel more comfortable delivering that message or, you know, even just being present, whatever the situation calls for. I have faculty tell me all the time that they're the expert in XYZ academic area. And that's great. But I'm the expert in study abroad. And I think that if you know that and you own that, that really helps in those kinds of conversations. The more you say it, the more you begin to believe it. I also think that it's important to understand your environment. So the university that I work in is a pretty conservative college and university setting. I do have the opportunity, for example, to work in a hybrid setting. But even with that being said, there are expectations for appearance, even when I'm working from home. And so that may not be the case in every organization or college or university that has a remote work option, but it's something that's important here at Texas Tech University. And so I think that it's important to just recognize some of those situations that you find yourself in because of the environment that you work. And it may be something that over time you might be able to change, but recognizing right now what the reality is and moving forward with that, I think is important.
I think most of our listeners would agree that you can't fully know what any job will be like or understand its entire scope until you've got a full cycle or academic year under your belt. What is something that surprised you about the role of director?
There are two things that really stand out to me and come to my mind first when you ask this question. So first of all, when I envisioned being the director of study abroad, I really envisioned having the opportunity to create these innovative programs, think about ways that we can get, you know, different groups of students around campus to participate in study abroad programs, really work on access and equity issues, things of that nature. And I do get to do some of that work, absolutely. But what I find that I spend most of my time on is actually risk management and emergency response. So here at Texas Tech, we do not have an individual who fills that role for international travel more broadly or study abroad. And so a lot of those responsibilities fall to me. And that's really where those other duties as assigned come into play. So this was a small portion of my job description when I first started. And then just based on the circumstances, the COVID pandemic, other emergencies that we have responded to, it has become a bigger part of my job than I ever would have anticipated. The other thing that really stands out to me about, you know, something that I didn't anticipate as being a director was the amount of time that it takes to be a good supervisor. So that's something that nobody tells you, especially if you want to do it well, which, I mean, you should want to be a good supervisor. It really takes a lot of time. And so I think what being in this role has taught me is balance. Because I still have my normal job duties and responsibilities, but I also do take a lot of time to make sure that I'm attending to the needs of my team members. And so that has been kind of a work in progress as I have worked to create that balance over the past few years that I've been in this role.
As we move up and undertake greater responsibility, one of the skills we hone is often the ability to say no when our plate is full. I know you to be thoughtful in this area. What would you add to this idea of saying no to certain things so we can say yes to what matters most?
For me, it's really all about defining priorities. So whether it's about developing a new skill or maybe, you know, networking with a certain group of people that you really want to get to know, whatever that kind of future goal might be, I think if you have outlined that and been very specific about the direction that you want to move, it makes it easier to say yes, but also easier to say no. Because if something doesn't, you know, align strategically with whatever those future goals are that you've set for yourself, then it's time to just recognize that and move on. And I think also sometimes we feel guilty about saying no because we might think, well, you know, if I don't do this, then nobody else is going to, or, you know, maybe the whole experience will fall through and it's going to be my fault or, you know, something like that. And I don't believe that to be true. I don't think that we should feel bad about saying no, because sometimes that opens a door for somebody else. That creates an opportunity that, you know, somebody else that you maybe don't even know or realize is looking for that kind of experience. And by us standing in the way, just because we feel like we have to, it doesn't allow other colleagues, peers, friends, whatever it might be, to grow and have that same special opportunity.
Let's consider from the flip side for a moment. Oftentimes, to move up, we go through a process of proving ourselves, which could involve proactively taking on progressive responsibilities or making creative use of the, quote, other duties as assigned category of our job descriptions. Could you give our listeners an example of how leveraging or developing new skill sets can help professionals on their upward path?
So for me, this has really been growth into that risk management and emergency response space. But I think for any professional, as you're looking at your job description, you're probably going to have some kind of line that says other duties as assigned, or kind of gives, you know, a vague description to say, hey, there's going to be maybe more that we're going to want you to do here, but we don't know what that is yet. So I think recognizing that is important, and having a conversation with your supervisor to try and gauge what that might be. So for example, if your supervisor has been in their position for some time, they probably have an idea based on your predecessor of what those other duties as assigned might really have been. So getting an idea first from your supervisor or others in your office might help you to then also determine, okay, what is really needed for this position. Now, if you have that conversation and the information that you receive back is kind of vague or maybe just not very descriptive, that's an opportunity for you. So what I would recommend in that situation is to really do a needs assessment of your office or of the environment that you're working in. What are the areas of potential growth what are the things that could ease pain points for your team members or maybe your supervisor? And then also, what are your interests? Balancing those two questions, I think, can really help you to define what you want to shape those other duties as assigned to be. As a follow-up to that, as you continue to progress with your other duties as assigned, you kind of define what that looks like. You're moving forward with those efforts. I do also think that it's important for those duties to become formal duties at a certain point. So if it is something that you find that you're spending a lot of time on, it's taking up a lot of your day, you're really initiating new projects, new initiatives, things of that nature, then that's also an opportunity to have a conversation with your supervisor and say, hey, this has been something that I've been doing. It's really seen a lot of growth. So I want to make that a formal duty in my job description rather than it kind of floundering in this miscellaneous category at the bottom.
I understand that you are passionate about health, safety, and risk management, topics that many in our field shy away from. How did this interest come about, and what draws you to keep leaning into this area of expertise?
Health and safety is vitally important to everything that we do. And as you hear me say that, you're probably saying, duh, of course it is. But for me, it really, what it comes down to is the fact that a student cannot fully receive all of the benefits of an education abroad program if they do not feel that they are physically, mentally, and emotionally safe. And so, you know, we have all of these goals for study abroad programs, all of these benefits that we anticipate our students will receive, and they cannot even begin to do that if they're not in a safe place. So for me, this really is kind of the core value of all international programs that we are developing. This is something that I really didn't have a lot of experience in, especially at the beginning of my career. And I'll also say that international risk management is a fairly new field. So there are really just a handful of folks who have a full-time position of working with international risk management at different colleges and universities in the United States. I think there's only about 100 or so individuals who have that formal position. And it was even less when I first started working in higher education. So this is a kind of a new and developing area, which I think is exciting and also means that if it's something that you're interested in, there's a lot of room, I think, for growth and development and engagement in this conversation. This really became important to me when I was working at Penn State. So as I mentioned, I worked there for a couple of years, and they have a very robust international risk management office. And I think one thing about mentorship is that there's formal mentorship and then there's informal mentorship. And this really was an example of informal mentorship because there was individuals who worked in that particular office that I just kind of got to observe and listen and see, okay, wait, what are they talking about? What are the things that are important? How are they handling different situations? And that observation was so informative for me and helped to really set the tone and give me the information that I needed to be successful in my role now at Texas Tech. That informal mentorship really shaped my risk management practice. So what keeps me coming back every day? Emergencies can sometimes be the worst situation that our students have ever found themselves in. And I think that the work absolutely is difficult, but what keeps me coming back to it is that I'm honored to be part of the efforts to really turn someone's day around.
We move into a director role that often means we step into a supervisory role as well. What advice do you have for first-time or new managers in this field?
So my first experience supervising someone was actually before I came into this position as the director of the office. So I will say that I was fortunate to kind of get a little taste of what this job duty entails. But in that particular experience, I was supervising a 70-year-old woman who had about 20 years of experience at this institution. So I often questioned, well, who's really supervising who here? Because she had so much information to share, so much history, and lots of good details that I was really benefiting from. And so with that, I would first tell any new supervisor, don't be intimidated by who you are supervising. Because I think that there's a way that you can frame it so that way it's a positive experience for everyone. So for example, with this woman that I was supervising for the first time, I really used it as a learning opportunity because, like I say, she had so much experience, so much history with this institution. And I think that she enjoyed kind of teaching me and helping me. So that was a relationship that really worked well for us. And I think being able to be honest and upfront and forthcoming with what we needed to do to be successful, I think really helped us to eventually do that.
Yeah, I think what you said is really interesting about those of us who are in managerial roles, being in a position where we're supervising individuals with much more experience than us. I've been in that position myself, and it's an interesting space to be. On a somewhat related note, another way we grow or help others to grow is through mentorship. How has mentoring staff or others in the field been important to you? And how can some of our mid-career listeners find ways like mentoring to contribute organically to our field?
We all got into this field because of our passion and learned from others along the way. So in my opinion, it's now time to return the favor. So I think any individual who has some experience in the field, whether that be just a couple of years or, you know, 20, 30 years, it doesn't matter. I think everyone has something that they can contribute and could be a mentor to someone else. It doesn't have to be formal mentorship, in my opinion. Like I was mentioning previously in that example from Penn State, I think informal mentorship can be just as valuable. So don't feel like you have to join a program or, you know, some kind of specific mentorship initiative. I think even just the opportunity to watch and observe and take in the efforts of other individuals can be super beneficial down the road. And I'll also say that even if you don't seek out mentorship or maybe even see yourself in a mentor role, people are watching. I recently discovered that I have like over 1,000 followers on LinkedIn. I had no idea at all, which is wonderful. I'm so glad that there are so many people that are tuned in to what I'm talking about on LinkedIn. I feel honored that you all have followed me. But I think that that is such a wonderful example of the fact that sometimes you're a mentor to people and you don't even know it.
In addition to everything that we've talked about so far, I know you to be someone who puts effort into giving back to this field. You've been involved with NAFSA and with the Ideas Grant, to name a few. Could you share with us, please, some tips and tricks for folks who are early in their careers about getting involved and how that can lead to career progression?
Volunteering in the field is definitely a great way to network, building those connections, meeting new people, meeting people that you wouldn't otherwise maybe talk to across different components of international education. I think all of that is useful because, I mean, you never know who you're going to be working with in the future. Education abroad may feel like a large field, especially when you're first getting started, but really it's a pretty small community. And so I think building that network is really going to suit new professionals. And one great way to do that is through volunteer opportunities. I think it's also really helpful just to know what's happening in the field. So I have had the opportunity to review proposals for conferences in the past, whether those be session proposals or even the poster proposals. And for me, it's helpful just to kind of get the pulse on what people are talking about. What's happening in the field? What are the pain points for organizations or universities? And how are folks being creative about managing and moving beyond those? So I think that for a young professional as well, that can be really wonderful to get tuned in to what the conversation in the field really is.
Let's zoom out for a moment. I'd love to ask you a big question, my friend. How does one know when they are ready for their next challenge?
I think first and foremost, you have to trust your gut. So when there have been other times in your life when you have maybe come up against a big challenge or have been ready for a change. And there's probably some kind of feeling that you get that you have experienced in the past. And I think you can call upon that same kind of feeling even in a professional setting when you're ready for your next challenge. So for me, that's a feeling of restlessness. I guess it maybe goes back to the travel bug that I caught early on. But when I start feeling restless and like ready to move, even physically, that's when I know, okay, I'm ready for a new challenge and for a change. I think it's also important to know when it's time to move on. You know, there may be some efforts that you're working on in your current position that are things that you're just banging your head against the wall. Maybe you can't figure out the solution. You can't find a way to make it work. You don't have the political power at your university or your organization to kind of, you know, push this effort forward. So being able to recognize that and understanding that maybe it's time to let somebody else try, that's really challenging. That takes a lot of self-analysis. But I think that that also is a chance for you to maybe move on to something different, a different project, a different initiative, maybe even a whole different position, which can be a difficult transition. But I think it's also important to remember that that also allows opportunities for other folks and allows other individuals to be part of that conversation or that initiative, whatever it might be. And they may have new and different ideas that are different from yours. So I think that that's, like I say, that's kind of a tough thing to wrestle with just personally, but understanding when it's time to move on is an important part of that conversation.
As we begin to wrap up here, I just have one more question for you. As you think about education abroad in 2024, what makes you hopeful?
It is so easy to get bogged down with the so many negative things that are going on in the world these days. But what keeps me hopeful and excited about education abroad is the continued interest from our students. I'll admit there's a lot of things about Gen Z that I don't understand. And yes, I am fully acknowledging my age when I say that. I know you have other podcast episodes that dive into that, which I have listened to diligently. But what I love and appreciate about our current students is that despite all of the challenges, students continue to find ways to be involved in impactful opportunities like education abroad programs. And that drive and motivation is what we need in the world right now. And that makes me really hopeful, not just for 2024, but for the future as well.
I can't imagine a better place to end things than right here. Whitney Longnecker, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Changing Lives Through Education Abroad. I am your host, Zach McInnes, and please make sure to join us next week as we continue to explore topics around international education and exchange. Thank you to my spectacular World Strides colleagues, Lindsay Kelcher and Sarah Kachuba, without whom this podcast would not be possible. Please subscribe to Changing Lives Through Education Abroad on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And share with your friends and colleagues. Let's create life-changing moments together.